That's a song by John Hall called Power, which he did at Madison Square Garden in September of 1979 at the Muse No Nukes concerts. James Taylor and the Doobie Brothers were on stage with him for that, and other performers included people like Chaka Khan and Crosby, Stills and Nash and Bruce Springsteen and on and on and on. It was a huge success. It spawned a hugely successful album. It also happened to come right about the same time as the Three Mile Island power plant accident and the movie The China Syndrome, all pretty much at the same time. And all of them helped turn public opinion against nuclear power plants in this country. We went more than three decades without another new nuclear power plant being built. Now, Missouri, you may not know this, but fully 25% of our power in the entire state comes from the Callaway nuclear power plant, which is never in the headlines because it just keeps doing science, cranking out electricity that helps our power go into our phones and all of our other devices. Well, my next guest has directed a documentary called The New Fire. And it's about young entrepreneurs who are trying to create new ways to design nuclear power plants. His name is David Schumacher, and he joins me now. Hi, David. How are you?
Hey, I'm really well, Paul. Good to be here.
Nice to have you here. Have I set out the plot of The New Fire pretty well here?
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah. I mean, it's definitely about the entrepreneurs that are developing these next-generation reactors. But it was really inspired by sort of what I was hearing from the climate scientists who were, you know, looking at how do we avoid the worst effects of climate change? How do we decarbonize, you know, get off of fossil fuels and get onto clean energy and reduce the emissions that are causing this global warming? And I was really surprised to learn a few years ago that there seems to be pretty broad consensus among the climate scientists that if we don't have nuclear power in the mix, we're not going to, you know, it's very unlikely we're going to be successful, and that that's really important. But that wasn't what I was hearing from, you know, elsewhere in the media and from environmental community. So I started to look into it because it seems like if that's what they were saying, I tend to trust the scientists, and that didn't seem to be sort of in the zeitgeist as far as I could tell at the time.
Are they saying that wind and solar power can't do it, or are they saying wind and solar power can't do it enough?
Well, wind and solar are definitely important, and, you know, there's no question about it, but you know, the majority of the United States' clean energy comes from nuclear power. I didn't know that, but it's true. And, they are saying that, you know, wind and solar is important. It's going to be a big part of the solution. But without nuclear in the mix, one climate scientist likened it to getting in the ring with Mike Tyson in the prime of his career with one arm tied behind your back.
Mm-hmm. Like you would have had a chance if no arms were tied behind your back. You're still going down, but this way it's going to happen faster.
Exactly, exactly. So that definitely gave me pause and made me want to look at what was going on out there.
Well, of course, nuclear power comes with some baggage, not just what I was talking about from 1979 with Three Mile Island, but also Chernobyl, Fukushima, and, of course, the Homer Simpson-Montgomery Burns effect, which is not good for the industry's image, is it?
Well, no, it didn't really help. And, you know, the industry's kind of a big mess anyway. I mean, I'll say that, you know, the nuclear industry that's been around for, you know, since the 60s has not been very good at marketing itself. And frankly, has just had one mistake after another. And so, you know, here we are today.
Okay, so these young entrepreneurs want to design new ways to put in new nuclear power plants. But as I mentioned in the introduction, we went more than three decades without a new one being built and going online. That just happened a couple of years ago. What makes them think that there will be a willingness on the part of the public and regulators and politicians to say, yeah, let's go back to nuclear. That's going to be our answer.
Well, it's definitely, you know, a big risk. There's no question about it. This is cutting edge, brand new technology, although it's been proven to work. These designs have already been demonstrated, and they work in government labs back in anywhere between the 60s and 90s. So this isn't like trying to get electricity from fusion, which has never been proven to work. This has definitely been proven to work. It's just that it hasn't been commercialized. Now, as far as the, you know, your point about public opinion and so forth, I mean, I think that a big piece of it is that, you know, in the late 70s and at the time of, you know, Three Mile Island and China Syndrome, the thing that was happening was that we didn't really need nuclear energy so much at the time. I mean, there was fossil fuels, we had plenty of coal, oil, you know, gas was coming along at that time. And, you know, if we didn't have nuclear in the mix, I mean, certainly the fossil fuel industry didn't want to have any competition. So they were, you know, certainly not crying for missing the nuclear enthusiasm in the public. And you know, so I think that we didn't really need it, you know. But then when climate change became an issue, you know, and frankly, when it comes to pollution and so forth, too, you know, then it's time to take a look at non-fossil sources of fuel. And, you know, nuclear is one of the, you know, one of the best sources that we have. And it's actually pretty well understood. But as far as the, you know, scientifically, but as far as public is concerned, I don't think it's very well understood at all. In fact, it's very misunderstood. And I think there's just a lot of misconceptions out there and sort of lies, frankly, that have been perpetrated and propagated about nuclear energy that are just sort of taken as sort of fact in conventional wisdom.
Such as?
Well, I think that, you know, one big one is that, you know, that it's a dangerous form of energy. I mean, there's risks and dangers with any type of technology, any type of energy, but what I was surprised to learn was that there's been no documented deaths in the United States ever from as a result of radiation from a nuclear power plant, including Three Mile Island. That's, you know, that was a big, you know, story. But actually, the fact is that if you look at per kilowatt hour of energy produced, I was really surprised to find out that nuclear power is actually the safest form of energy that we know of. And even safer, I mean, marginally, but even safer than wind and solar.
Well, why then don't the utilities say, you know what, here's the evidence, here's the information on this, we need this, it's going to help us, it's going to work to accrue to everybody's bottom line. After all, we're going to need more electricity, particularly as the world turns more towards electric cars. You got to plug those in, and the electricity has got to come from somewhere. Why not go from this safe, environmentally good thing and stay away from coal and fossil fuels? Why hasn't the industry or the utilities themselves step forward to try to sell that message?
Well, interestingly, if you look at the nuclear industry, it's a little different than other energy industries. If you look at, let's say, petroleum, you know, you have who represents the petroleum industry, the nuclear or the American Petroleum Institute, for example, and who are the members and what do they represent? They represent the production of petroleum, the producers of petroleum.
Yep.
And so that's very clear as to what's being represented, and they have very sort of specific interests, and, you know, they're pretty good at representing those interests, whether or not you or I like it.
Mm-hmm.
But on the nuclear side, so what's the nuclear fuel? Is uranium. Well, uranium is 2 million times as energy dense as petroleum is. So it's so energy dense that the cost of that fuel is minuscule, certainly by comparison with any other type of energy that we know of. And so when you start talking about who the industry actually is the utilities, really. It's not so much companies that produce uranium or even companies that manufacture or used to manufacture nuclear plants. It's really, you know, by and large, the lion's share of what we call the nuclear industry today is actually utilities. And the problem with that is that they don't really have any, you know, loyalty or, you know, allegiance strictly to nuclear, like the American Petroleum Institute might have to petroleum. And so utility companies own, sure, they own nuclear plants, but they also own solar and wind and gas and coal plants. And they're just, their job is to make sure that when you go and turn the light switch on, that light comes on every time. Mm-hmm. That's their job.
Yep.
And it's not up to them to sort of editorialize or advocate for one form of power or the other. That's really up to the government to do that, or the, you know, the, there's utility boards and so forth. So that's more of a public, you know, policy issue. And then the utilities just sort of follow those mandates. And so their job is really just to make sure we have energy, follow the guidelines that are laid out by, you know, the government above them. And that's about it. So they're not going to advocate for nuclear, certainly as vociferously as, you know, their counterparts in the petroleum industry would for petroleum. But the interesting thing is they are the largest, you know, sort of the plurality of the nuclear industry, quote unquote, is those utilities.
Right.
But they're not really particularly loyal to nuclear.
In your movie, The New Fire, there are young people, young entrepreneurs who are entering the field and trying to change the technology of nuclear power plants. Are they doing it to get rich or to save the world?
Well, I would say clearly this is so high risk and so many, you know, problems with this, the whole pathway forward right now. There's a lot of uncertainty. So, you know, if they were trying to get rich, I mean, anybody who can become a nuclear engineer has what it takes to do really well, let's just say on Wall Street or somewhere. They've got, you know, definitely have that quant skill that is necessary there.
Yep.
And so these are people that are just really want to save the world, I think, and really make a difference. And, you know, they're sort of putting their money where their mouth is right now.
I was very happy to see in your movie young women involved in developing some of this new technology for nuclear reactors. Are there a lot of them, or did you find the six?
It's really interesting. You know, there's a lot of women that are in nuclear, and it's really inspiring and interesting. And that's something that I found really interesting. I mean, that was kind of the thing when I started to look into this issue. I mean, I don't think this was a movie just because, you know, of the climate issue and the role that, you know, the scientists said nuclear had to play. I needed characters. And, you know, it's not like you have to just really look very far to find women, great women characters in the nuclear innovation world. I wouldn't say they grow on trees, but there's plenty of them out there, and I think that's a great thing.
I think that's a great thing, too. The movie is called The New Fire. It's going to be screened this weekend, November 6th at 6 p.m. at the Tivoli, and it's free as part of the St. Louis International Film Festival. This is the man who directed it, David Schumacher. Thanks so much for joining me here today.
Thank you so much, Paul.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.